The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now and live there, full Technicolor, Paul Hill, full-time, you know, investor, equity analyst, always on the markets, never sleeps, always in his spreadsheets. He sleeps in a spreadsheet, not a bedsheet. You like that?
Good morning, Justin. And just to sort of like riposte yours, I see you've got your Mussolini shirt on there, yeah. The black shirt fascists.
I've got a black background here, if you're listening on podcasts, and I realise why I don't wear dark shirts now. It's because I've just got a floating head, basically. That's all I am. So you may check out the video. Let's get into a little bit of macro before we look at individual stocks. Now, the Bank of England came out yesterday, and of course, a lot of people said, wow, that's quite shocking. Most people thought the recession is nailed on quite a few months back, I suppose. But I did put out a survey on Twitter saying, was this expected or was it worse than expected? What's your thoughts? They do seem now to have upped the inflation targets to 13%. They do say we're going to be in a recession to the back end of 2023. What's your thoughts on that? Were they more bearish than you expected, Paul?
No, the market had absolutely sort of priced in the bond market. The gilts hardly moved at all. Any equities in the UK didn't move at all on the back of it. I mean, you know, you'd have expected if they were going to push, if it had been priced in, you'd expect the house builders, you know, to sort of really sell off yesterday. And yes, they did sell off a bit, but not massively. And you'd expect the banks to have rallied and they didn't rally. So all I would say is that it was really ho-hum. And I actually think Andrew Bailey and the team there are probably one of the few central banks around the world that are actually now starting to be honest with what we expect. And yeah, we've got inflation potentially hitting 13% later on in the year and still staying elevated for most of next year, I think. I saw a number around about 9% plus in this time next year in Q3. So we're still going to have this negative real income for people over the next sort of 12 months, and it will be. But it's only going to be they reckon it's only going to be a shallow recession. I mean, the big sort of like, you know, monster numbers coming out. One we've got this afternoon is the US payrolls, which we'll wait and see. That's supposed to be 250, payrolls. But the bigger number is going to be wage inflation at about 5%. And then we've got the real sort of like, you know, killer data point of the month, which is the US CPI next month. Has it gone down from current levels? And I think we've talked about this for quite some time in terms of, you know, a lot of the raw material cost, commodities, oil, etc., are starting to roll over. And I actually think overall, the market is starting now to get more comfortable with this sort of soft landing. I mean, what have you seen? I mean, we've obviously just come through a sort of major Q2 earnings season in the States. Have you got any sort of key takeaways, key messages which have come out of it?
Listen, I focus mainly on the micro caps in the UK. I do look at, you know, headline figures and all that stuff. But I keep a track of all the commodity prices and even Brent crude. You know, is rolling over on a chart there. It's called what's called a 200-day moving average. It's down below that and it hasn't done that for a while. We're now at $96. This was up to 125 a while back, and all commodities are down 30-40%. So that takes a while to play through, of course. But yes, I think inflation is coming down. What's worrying? I mean, when you look at it, I looked at a report yesterday. In fact, it was in the morning podcast I did. But construction PMI contracted for the first time in 18 months, yesterday, which is quite worrying. And then what you got, it's hard to predict. So when we say of pricing in stuff, the market has fallen by a lot and it's priced in a lot, I know. But they're trying to find out how bad it's going to get, because you almost find, like the market selling begets selling, people start to tighten their belts more. And even if you saw the hiring, did you see that KPMG came out now and said they saw the slowest increase in the number of permanent jobs filled for 17 months? So sometimes you get this exacerbation, don't you, of, you know, a sell-off and worry. And almost like, we all know that. You start to tighten your belts and that has the overall effect. So people start to buy less, produce less, less energy is used. So, of course, energy comes down. So it's hard to know where the bottom is. But if you look at it, like I said, on the micro cap level, you see a couple of stocks falling out of bed with bad trading updates. But generally, I think some of the stocks now are at their bottom. They've been bumping along the bottom here. They've been, okay, a bit of volatility, but they haven't had those massive fall out of beds, a lot of them. You know, they even in fact, one of your stocks, Bricks, came out with figures, didn't drop off a cliff, really, did it? I mean, so...
I think
we've seen the bottom. So bottom's close, I think, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But I think it's important, just before we move on to those individual companies, and I will touch on Purple Bricks, because I'm actually going to speak to their CEO, hopefully next week. But in terms of the sort of like the big picture with the sort of Q2 earnings season, what's sort of like come out is that earnings have been less bad because people were sort of baking in sort of like, you know, severe recession and reducing sort of earnings estimates. And actually that hasn't transpired. Plus, it seems as though, and this is again going to be a big driver for the market in terms of going forward, is that the bond market and the equity market now, in my view, seem to be fairly aligned, because you've got effectively the bond market saying that the Federal Reserve is going to increase interest rates short term, and you see that at the front end, and then as next year is going to reduce interest rates. And the reason is not because of a major recession. It's actually because they can, because inflation in the States will start rolling over, and that is where they're aligned. And this is where I haven't heard, you know, most people are saying, oh, the bond and the equity market don't agree, but actually they do. They're both saying there's going to be a soft landing, which is absolutely key, because that means if the Fed can take its foot off the brake in terms of monetary policy next year, then growth, all things sort of like, you know, NASDAQ and long duration assets and risk assets are increasing. So small caps, technology, and even Bitcoin has rallied significantly from its lows at the end of June. And I think that's the sort of big takeaway is the market, the smart money is betting on a relatively soft landing in the States. And you've actually seen that coming through from the Q3 earnings, you know, sort of like messages, because you've had a lot of big companies saying, yes, we've seen down trading in the consumer, but overall the corporate spend, the CapEx spend is still pretty good. Digitization spend to the cloud is still very good. The automotive boys are still doing very well. The housing market hasn't rolled over yet, even though you've got higher mortgage rates because mortgage availability is still pretty good. But you are seeing people in the lower income and, you know, sort of in the UK and the universal credit who are actually, you know, severely struggling with energy prices. And while we go through this transition over the next 12, 18 months, yes, it's going to be tough for those people, but the economy will still bump it along. We have record people at casinos, you know, on holidays. The travel stocks have been doing very well. The hotel groups have been doing very well. They've all said they've had record bookings, and the prices have gone up. So, you know, you can get very negative, but that then comes down to, you know, your observation, why are micro caps sort of like now reached a bottom? Well, the reason is if we are going to get a flat landing, then they can't, you know, operationally wise, we've priced in Armageddon, and actually the reality is going to be probably better. Therefore, the risk reward profile is bringing more people into these sort of small and micro cap areas. And I think there's some sort of real bargains there, but that would be the key takeaway for me, is the smart money now is saying we're going to get a soft landing in the States. It may get slightly more wobbly in the UK and Europe simply because of the Russian Ukraine crisis. But again, you know, I actually think, and I know this is not being priced into the market, I actually think in the next 6 months we will have a resolution in Ukraine. And if that happens, then we're going to see the economy rip. I mean, because it's going to be like huge, wow, fabulous, you know. So I don't think you are negative, and I'm not either. But I wouldn't, you know, if people are sitting on really quite a large red losses in their portfolios at the moment, then, you know, better times will happen. Well, I'm hoping so anyway.
Yeah, no, listen, you mentioned there about bad news. That's it. I did look. The reason why I put the survey out there earlier on was because I think, do you know what? It's all bad news, but we sort of know the bad news. No one's really pricing any good news. You know, no one's really pricing. And that's, I think, the bad news is largely priced in, so we sort of know about it. Now the announcement of a recession, we sort of know about anyway. It's all out there. So, and if you look at the NASDAQ, it's nuts. Listen, this has happened before with the NASDAQ. It's rallied 19% off the lows. 20% is the start of a bull market. I'm not saying it's not a fake bounce. It can be. I mean, if you look back at the great financial crisis, the S&P rallied 18%, then 24% before it found a bottom. So I'm not saying we won't retest the bottoms, but if you look again back to that time, the stock market starts a rally 3 to 6 months before the end of a recession. You know, so the markets look ahead. So as long as I can see that things are not getting worse, that people sort of jump in. And when you get that money inflow, when people see, oh, hang on a second, it's getting better, it's like, and I said this, it's like a tsunami of inflow. You know, the stock market rises, people write, this is the bottom, more money comes in, the share prices go up, more money comes in. And so it does, you get this aggressive bounces from the bottom. And I think we are, mentioned before, in a bottoming process. I don't know how long this process will take, but I think the pain, the greatest pain has been felt so far. And I don't think it'll go down a lot further if it does go down. But I think, you know, the biggest drops have happened, you know.
And just sentiment-wise, I mean, you know, you can obviously afford the bills and I can afford the bills. But let's just assume, for instance, energy prices and utility prices went down from £300-£400 a month, and halved back to where, not to where they, if they halved, they wouldn't get back to where they were before pre-pandemic. But if they significantly dropped, if you saw oil and gas, you know, halve, which could easily happen if they have a resolution in Ukraine, sentiment-wise for the consumer, that would be just a game changer.
Yeah. Well, look at that. I mean, if we get recession, you see things slowing down. Okay, and of course, every time we've had an oil price spike, I think the last four times we've had a recession, oil price has dropped off a cliff. If you get that and you get a resolution in Ukraine, wow, that'd be phenomenal. So yeah, but no one's pricing in any good news at the moment. That's the trouble.
That would be the vaccine moment of November 2020. But just coming back to your observation in microcaps, let's just run through Purple Bricks, because you know I own it, and I've been pretty much hammered by some of my consumer stocks, and this is one of them. They came out with their full year audited numbers, and it was very much in line in terms of what they'd previously guided. But they've gone through a sort of like a strategic review process, and the new newly appointed CEO Helena Marsden is actually doing all the right things. I think she's putting a plan together, really, and it's sort of self-help measures, which is great because that means it's under largely the company's control. So reducing its sort of headcount, it's improving its sales efficiency and conversion process. It's increasing prices. It's removed the sort of the price guarantee as well. So it's doing a whole lot of stuff that should be very beneficial to the actual business long term. And this is going to be a transitionary sort of like, you know, 12-month period. But assuming that is the case and it works, and of course, I mean, that given the history, then that is a big if. But I would certainly say there's better than a fair wind behind it that it can. Then, you know, it will start seeing some top line growth in 2024. And they will be importantly cash flow positive and profitable. And even this year in the transitionary where they, you know, they obviously continue to spend money on restructuring, they'll still end the year with sort of like, you know, 9p per share of just net cash. And on that basis, you know, it's got plenty of time to get this right. And I'm hoping to speak to Helena sometime next week to get a better handle on what she sees as the vision for it. But there's a huge opportunity. I mean, given the shares are only at 15p per, you know, p each, and they're currently, as I say, they've got higher net cash balance at the moment, but well, they had it last year, but they'll probably have about 9p forecast for the end of I think it's March 2023, the end of this financial year. So they've still got absolutely, you know, plenty of resources, etc. But I'm trying to get, you know, once that happens, then, you know, they're guiding to sales around about flat for this year. So they had 70 million last year and they're planning to do around about 70 million this year, second half weighted, and then go up to 90. But, you know, I'm still pretty positive on the actual stock. And I think she is doing the right thing. Plus, there's now an active investor in there who's, you know, making sure that the business hold the management team's feet to the fire. Plus, there's a really good, strong indication. The non-exec chairman, you know, just bought, I think it was 2.5 million shares on the market, which is not an insignificant number, Paul Pindar. And that's sort of like, you know, £370,000 worth of, you know, of investment just in the firm. So, you know, he's obviously sees value, and I do as well. I mean, I reckon that even with a sort of one-time sales multiple, if they can get this turnaround strategy right, you'll see the shares go, you know, 35-40p. And I didn't know City, who still cover it, they've got a 45p fair value as well. And given that the shares are only 15, I mean, I just think that's one just to be patient on. And yes, it's been a sort of perennial disappointer, but as I say, I'm really quite hopeful now that the strategy has been realigned and there's a lot of self-help in there that they can actually, you know, pull the levers to get this ship sort of like sailing again.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I mean, like this year was the kitchen sink year, wasn't it? And like I said, they used what, 30.8 million in operations there. They still got 43 yet left. But I mean, that's it. What you're looking for is really is instructions, isn't that going up, hopefully, and the amount of the charge for those instructions, will that come? If it does, it'll fly, you know?
Well, I think they'll start winning more market share as well, because, you know, they haven't really been very focused. And I'm hoping that the new strategy is bringing new products on board as well with financial services. And the better execution will help them win more market share, because, you know, if you are a house seller and you're feeling a bit pinched, then maybe you don't want to pay a 2-3% or 1% sort of like, you know, sales commission. You want to pay, you know, you want to save yourself 2,000 quid, which is not insignificant in this climate.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the housing market? I mean, if you get the interest rates going up here, what are your thoughts there? Do you think it'll slow down?
That's quite interesting, actually, because what happened in the States, coming back to the macro, is that the, you know, last couple of days, the house builders out there have started to recover quite strongly, because as the market has got more comfortable with a soft landing, they can see interest rates and mortgage rates reducing going forward in 2023, 2024, which will support the sort of like, you know, housing market out there. And I could see the similar sort of thing happening here, because there's this huge value in the whole sort of like, you know, housing ecosystem. House builders trade at around 1x tangible assets. The sort of like the building products trade at sort of, you know, high single digit, you know, or very low double digit type multiples. And yes, we are seeing softness in the sort of some of the building products areas, i.e. such that the DIY Wix reported it, and I think likewise did Travis Perkins with its Toolstation online proposition. But you came out with some really strong results a couple of weeks ago, or just trading update from Lords Group Trading, you know, the building products guys, and they support mainly the sort of tradespeople on the, you know, repair, maintenance. That's really 80% of their business is repair, maintenance and improvement of houses. And there's still masses of work. I mean, one, you've got new build. We're still way below sort of where the housing market needs to be at sort of 200,000 new homes per annum, where we should be at 300,000. And then, you know, the housing stock needs major sort of like, you know, improvements, not least just to meet all of the, you know, the carbonisation, the greater fuel efficiency of homes. And that's where they're seeing quite a lot of product growth as well. In fact, they came out with a trading update, you know, Shankar Patel, for instance, was saying, you know, he's still seeing strong demand across the board. The only area, problem really he has, is getting enough boilers from his suppliers to sell them into, you know, into homes. So they reiterated, you know, their guidance for the year. And, you know, I actually think the market's got it priced wrong, because the shares are, last time I looked at, were around about 80p, maybe have ticked up slightly. But I could easily see these be 110, 120p without any problem at all, even on a modest valuation. So they're doing everything. And I've mentioned to it before, you know, the guys there are best in class entrepreneurs. And, you know, they really have sort of like, they've taken market share consistently over the last, you know, 20, 20 years, so through multiple cycles, and they've been through this and they'll get through it again. But yeah, I actually think coming round trip to your question, the market is unfairly punishing these, and there's value in the whole housing complex.
Right, I can't help but notice probably missing in the main event here. You've had lots of discussion on this stock, and Rev B, Revolution Beauty.
Oh, crikey, yeah.
It's, I don't know what it IPO'd at, 150, 160?
160 it was.
August last year.
Yeah, now just over 18, a year ago, yeah.
18.5 pence. They came out with a sort of trading update on results. So what happened there? It just fell off a cliff. I don't follow the stock closely. All I knew is it dropped off a cliff, and I had a lot of noise about it, saying, what's going on here? You know, Paul was talking about this and all that. So what happened? Why did it fall off a cliff?
Let's just define what they do, right? Revolution Beauty is an affordable challenger cosmetics brand that is, you know, quality products, but it's at affordable prices. And they're a major company. They supply into the sort of like, you know, the big retailers into the UK, the likes of Boots and Superdrug, and likewise the States. And their US footprint is now bigger on a store basis than it is in the UK. So they've got, they brought Walgreens on recently. They sell into Ultra Beauty. I can't remember the other one is, but they've got major sort of like, you know, distribution out in the States. It's Target, Target, as they like to call themselves out in the States. Who are the other one? They're going to do about sort of 200, 220 million of turnover for this year. So they're not insignificant, but they're going through some temporary issues this last year, those last few months. They've been hit by the Ukraine-Russia conflict because they did a lot of exports to that particular region, which I think was about 9% of sales. And they've also seen some of their retail customers slow down their ordering. And what that's mean, you've had a sort of concertina of increases in inventory, and it's also pushed up debt. So you've had this softness at the top line, which not only has it hit their sort of like, you know, their key retailers, it's also hit their online, because as more people have started to enjoy themselves going out partying, there's been greater sales through stores, etc. So they've seen a slow growth, but let's be clear about it, they're still going to hit. If you exclude Russia as a one-time hit, then they're still going to do double-digit top-line growth this year. So we're not looking at a sinking ship, which is better than the market. The cosmetics market for this year overall worldwide is forecast to grow at sort of high single digits, around about 7%, 8%. And they'll do, I mean, when I was doing the numbers, they'll do over 15% this year. So they're still really doing very well. They're just not doing hyper-growth is what they were. And they're having to now sort of like just temporarily cut their cloth and cut some of their costs to make sure that they've managed their business and their infrastructure to, you know, for this new sizing. Anyway, the market has got hugely spooked because it's a profit warning, and they see, you know, there's just been one great big sell-off after a, you know, wave of sell-off. And the shares, in my view, are ridiculously priced. They're, as you say, at around about 20p, they trade on about 5x EV EBITDA, even on reduced estimates of cash profits of EBITDA for this year. And the market typically trades on sort of like, you know, 15 times on this one, or even much higher. And that's, you know, on margins of around about 8% or 8 or 9%. And really, you know, when they look at their peers, their challenger peers like Wallpaint, they do 15, 16%. So coming to the big question, to me, this, you know, this smells as though it's a huge overreaction by the market, but equally, you know, they did delay their audited results, and they didn't, you know, there's nothing being flagged as being major on that, but they have delayed their audited results. It was supposed to go out on the 4th of earlier this week, and yesterday I think it was supposed to go out, and they've pushed it to the 30th of August. So I mean, I would say, you know, as a, I mean, I haven't got any cash, but I wish I had some spare money to be put into sort of consumer stocks, but I've got two, and I haven't done too well in those. But, you know, in terms of, I would, you know, if I was going to say for investors, if you're more cautious before putting money in, just wait until the audited results come out on the 30th, because if they're stable, And there's a plan to do it. I could actually see a lot of director buying potentially in this, even though they do own quite a lot already, simply because it's ridiculously lowly valued. But if you really want to got sort of like a more risk tolerant approach, then obviously have a look at it at these levels, because they're just crazily cheap for a quality quality brand that's actually still growing and should increase their margins going forward. Yes, there are risks, and there's, you know, in the short term, and it would be good that, you know, they've got to effectively sell through that stock to start reducing the, you know, the net debt. And I think the net debt they were saying was roughly going to be around about sort of 21 mil. But that's still only just over 1x EBITDA. So they should be able to manage through that. And they do have a £40 million facility as well. So there shouldn't be any of that issue. But hey, until you see the audited numbers, investors like I am are still very much in the dark.
It's been exacerbated by, I mean, Jupiter's selling down a bit, isn't it? Isn't that what?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they're now one of the anchor investors at the IPO.
Yeah. So, do you know what? In this market, I keep saying, I see people jumping in, trying to catch a falling knife. Think, wait. In a bear market, you've got you're going to have all the time to wait. You know, it's just wait it out. If you like the company or whatever, don't just jump in on a big fall. In fact, someone said to me, I don't know what it was, the old 3-day rule. If you have a big fall off in the stock, give it 3 days. The volume sort of cools down a bit then, you know, but don't jump in straight away. But wait.
When I run the numbers on, on Revolution Beauty, and if you assume sort of like a 15% EBITDA margin just on, you know, this year's projected revenues of 220, then, you know, you run that through and you get sort of like, you know, 6.5p of EPS. Now, if you do that and then put a sort of 12, even a modest 12 times multiple on it, you get around about what, it's over 70p, don't we? Get over 80p. So, you know, you're looking at significant upside from current levels. And I could see if there's nothing of major note or, you know, of new news which comes out at the audit results on the 30th, I could see these shares double from current levels quite quickly. But let's be clear about it. It's not without risk. And, you know, if you decide to get ahead of the number being released, then which is what the market's fearing. And that's the classic risk reward, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's like in these markets, you're better off just sitting back, and almost you will have stocks fall out of bed that are good stocks. That happens in bear markets, you know. And then it's the time to take advantage.
Yeah,
you know?
I would also add that I've interviewed the CEO Adam Minto a couple of times, and he's a class act. He loves and breathes the cosmetics industry, and has been doing it for 20-odd, 30 the whole of his life. And he doesn't need to work, but he does it because he's just passionate about it, and he'll be feeling really cut up about what's happened, and he'll be, in my view, absolutely sort of like, you know, trying his best, and the management team trying their best to make sure that this business gets back onto the, you know, onto the rails quickly. He is just part and parcel of that business, loves it, and there's absolutely no risk of him not doing his utmost to make sure that this business gets back on track as quickly as possible. So, he's a quality operator. He's done this through economic cycle. So he's a top quality operator. They've got a good management team, and he'll be totally churned up about this, I'm absolutely sure.
Yeah. Well, do you know what's annoying? When you get sellers like that, institutions selling, sometimes, you know, You can sort of take advantage of that sometimes, because like institutions sometimes just sell down, don't they? You know what I mean? And they just hammer this. In fact, I've got an example of that right now. In fact, one of my stocks, I've talked about E-Energy, which is quite annoying. Their joint broker, which is Canaccord, which became a joint broker recently, they held about 12% of the stock, you know? They came out with a trading update for the year. Decent, 22 million of revenue, adjusted EBITDA of 3 million, which was expected. You know, the shares rallied on this news, which is very good. I mean, if you look at it, forward order book now is equal to their market cap, pretty much, with 25.3 million, up from 18 at the end of last year. They got 88% of Q1 revenues contracted by June 30th. Now, their Q1 starts 1st of July. 39% or 40% of full-year revenues contracted already. It rose up, and this is well-placed to hit targets for next year, which is over 30 million revenue, 5 million EBITDA. It went up, and all of a sudden, loads of volume came in. What's going on here? Loads of volume, and it started going down. And came up today. Canaccord said, "Oh, we've." They said in the RNS, Canaccord said, "Just because the E-Energy issued some shares for the acquisition of this latest company, our percentage has gone down." So I went through all the RNSs from holdings from Canaccord, and they've reduced their holding. And I thought, what's we talking about? So it's annoying. And I thought, I can't understand. The market likes the trading update. It's a good value. You know, it's in a very hot sector. Right now, apart from payroll, energy is the biggest bill for customers, for businesses. Mm. And if, let's say, tackle that, they're going to be losing money pretty much or going bust. And, you know, E-Energy does that, solves that huge problem. And they're very busy. You know, they're literally growing very quickly. And I thought, why is it going down? And I could see this sell all every day, and I thought, this is so annoying. But I mean, it's, you know, it's going to stop in a while. I don't know when it's going to stop. But I mean,
yeah, you just got to be patient. Just let those flush through. I mean, another one on the cost of living crisis that you know, I mentioned that I'd bought was MoneySupermarket.com.
That's and they rallied, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. They came out with a better than expected trading update about sort of 2 weeks ago, saying that they were increasing expectations, and you know, their first half had been stronger than expected. So, I mean, as I say, you know, they had a similar sort of situation. They had a number of institutions selling down, and they're starting to actually now see the upside. And I could see, and this hasn't been talked about in any of the press releases, or just recently in the commentary, but a point if for other investors who have got in with me on moneysupermarket.com is that, I don't know if people noticed, but Ofgem is now going to reset the price cap on energy every 3 months rather than 6 months. And because it was 6 months and we had a spike in energy prices, that it's meant that all the competitive deals for energy, you know, suppliers, et cetera, were taken off the market and still are taken off the market simply because, you know, the price cap is lower than the wholesale energy prices, and therefore nobody's going to give you a deal when they're already losing. But once that realigns, that dynamic is going to change. And two things. One, in October, it will realign. It should do because of the, you know, the price cap should have caught up with wholesale prices. But going forward, every 3 months rather than 6 months, it means it will stay aligned more often. And you'll, and they haven't got any revenue. And that was a big benefit. And there's nothing baked in the estimates either going forward for energy. So I can see this time next year that actually, you know, returning quite well. And, you know, overall, moneysupermarket.com has done pretty well just recently on the back of increased travel, people wanting travel, in, you know, travel insurance, etc. And their sort of money products division, competitive, sort of like, you know, mortgages and this sort of stuff, and other home insurance and stuff, again has done the well. And but you'll see, you know, that come back. And yeah, the other insurers, you know, sort of like with car and home, yes, they were muted because the regulator has put a sort of like a, you know, they changed the rule about 18 months ago, saying for insurers, they've got to offer new customers the same deal as existing customers the same deal as new customers, and that impacted sentiment. But it's coming back, and I still think it's very cheap. I mean, when I was running the numbers, I can easily see this is a fair value of around about sort of like, you know, £3. So, and it's what it's rallied to 220. So there's still plenty of upside in that one.
As a cost of living play. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. People should look at the moment. I mean, you know, regardless of where you think the market's going to go for a while, I mean, it's worth looking at your stocks thinking, okay, is this company going to be squeezed over the next 6 to 12 months? Or, you know, if you get a whole load of sort of consumer-facing stocks, you know, like I said, it's going to be hard work for you. So you're going to have one or two that you think are going to be unaffected by this, or even benefit. You know, I see E-Energy benefiting from this completely, and even going forward with net zero, that acquisition there. But so... Money Supermarkets, yes, it's rallied strongly in the last, what, a few weeks, isn't it? So when did you buy into this? When did you buy into this? I can't remember now.
You never remember my ones with your big cap, do you? I did about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, I think. Oh, okay. I picked it in, I can't remember what it was, probably
that's
160,
a good gap up on the chart.
160, 170 or something like that. So I haven't got masses of, you know, sort of like bread in there, but it was, I think I put a full position in anyway.
Yeah, that's a good gap. Do you know what? You can see it literally on the chart there. It went under, what did it get under, 165, then it rose again to 185, came back down and retested that. Didn't go as low as 165. That there, double bottom, was very good, a higher low, and then it really jumped up, didn't it, on that trading update. So,
and it generates a shed load of cash, this thing. So on that basis, private equity could take this out. I mean, you know, I've used, when I put a £3, I think I used 12 times EBITDA multiple, but these things can go at sort of like 10 times EBITDA because they've got very few sort of like, you know, it's all brand and they've got, you know, they're just cash generators essentially because they get paid their commissions up front and the working capital cycle is fabulous on them and they don't need much sort of ongoing CapEx investment other than just making sure in the brand is right. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if private equity had a pop at, you know, at the business at some point in time. So I think they're a takeover target, particularly for the US, as the, you know, the US dollar is still pretty strong against, you know, the pound.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's odd. I mean, it's funny trying to look at the valuation of the companies. And I was looking at a kind of called Note on Energy, for example. And the smartest or the nearest competitor, but it's a lot bigger, is Smart Metering Systems, E-Energy. And Canaccord has put E-Energy, because there's a couple lower than them, but Smart Metering Systems are valued at 23 times EBITDA, right?
That's different, though, that is, mate.
No, I know.
That's a totally... That's a 90-95% recurring revenue model.
Yeah, but I know, but E-Energy is recurring revenue. Even if you put them 10 times EBITDA, you're looking at double share price from here. So it's
yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, but you know, I like it. It's just not annoying. Have you noticed that? I've noticed quite a few institutions, not just on stocks I hold, just taking off some, you know, not big sells, but almost trying to maybe, you know, increase their capital to reinvest. I've noticed quite a few institutions, you know, selling down on stock here and there, you know. And
they've had no choice because it's redemptions.
Yeah. Well, there we are. So, yeah.
If they're an open-ended fund and some of their investors want to take out the money, they need cash to be able to pay them. So, yeah, most of them are having to redeem. Unless it's a closed-ended fund, a unit trust, then they're safe. They haven't got to do anything. But, yeah, you're going to get natural selling at the market. Selling, unfortunately, means if people come out of their, you know, sort of like their funds on the open-ended ones, then, yeah, I mean, it's going to...
And that's what we're saying, isn't it, about people saying... You know, when people say they see a fund selling, or they must know something, or worrying, it's not 99% of the time, they don't know anything. It can't be inside, it can't be illegal, you know. So, yeah, so, you know, if you have confidence in a company you've done a lot of research on, it's don't worry about it. Okay.
Another one which is sort of counter-cyclical, which is worth raising, is Man Olay. And I know we've talked about this a lot, but there's been a great deal in the press just recently, certainly in the FD. They've done a lot on the sort of the insolvency stats. And also there's been a COVID. Big increase, obviously, over the last 12 months. But they've also been talking a great deal, which hadn't appreciated, you know, as much about the bounce back loans of, you know, the government when they pushed them out in early 2020 to help small, medium firms get through the financial crisis. And they gave out roughly around about £47 billion worth of bounce back loans. Then these are up to sort of £50,000, and they now reckon about £5 billion of that, or £4.9 billion of that, could be just due to sort of abuse and fraud. And they've identified 18,000 cases which look suspect. And on that basis, then, you know, they're going to struggle actually recovering that money, and they need some expertise. And Man Olay could
much,
be
how much is the thing? How much is it fraud?
About £5 billion. Oh, okay. Just four point now. The insolvency recovery market annual is only 1.5 billion. So, you know, we're talking three times higher, you know, than if you're a bank who you're effectively the first port of call to recover the money, or at the end, the sort of the backstop, which being the Treasury, HMRC, and you're looking to recover this, particularly with all the political sentiment, and you've got all the media, like the Financial Times, waving this around, saying, you know, you didn't put proper controls and checks and balances in place at the start. Then they're going to be under pressure politically to get this one sorted. And Man Olay is probably one of the best ways for them to start recovering some of that debt where they can be recovered. If you've got a director who's been acting slightly, you know, sort of like leading edge, and all have been, you know, on the naughty step. Then essentially they've got a tried and tested formula to be able to start recovering these type of debts from people who've got ability to pay with houses and all this sort of stuff. So you know, that could be another lift for them. So not only have you got the sort of the tougher economic conditions, you've got the backlog from the pandemic, and you've got the natural growing or secular growth of this sort of third party specialist taking on these insolvency cases, which is Manor Lace. You've got those just secular growth. You've also got this potential. You know, they've got the government, and it's a drop. They haven't sorted it yet. It's still massive. If they decide to use a third or multiple third parties to do this, then Manor Lay is going to be right in that place. So I thought it was just quite interesting that the Financial Times were majoring on this one this last week. So you know, it's upside that I hadn't really appreciated.
Yeah. If they're trying to break out twice, they're trying to get about 325 and now 267, they roll over. But
it's a bit of a show me story, this one. It happens, it'll happen.
Yeah, it will. Once it breaks out next time, it'll rally. It'll go crazy, I suppose. Yeah.
Another two companies that I would say where you've got no problem with demand. In fact, you've got totally the opposite. First off is Source Bio, who came out with a trading update earlier in the week. And I mean, frankly, the demand for their cellular digital pathology services is just off the charts. I mean, they've just got, it just is absolutely rocketing. I mean, I calculated that division was up 130% like for like, you know, even when you put in the acquisition that they do. And they're just seeing, you know, just exceptionally strong conditions. And it's really on the back of, you know, continued shortage of pathologists in the NHS or anywhere in the country. And they have the most amount of these on their system. And, you know, the increasing momentum in the increasing demand for elective procedures. And you've still got that patient backlog of 6.5 million. And that's got years and years to sort of like work through, because you're getting more and more people who didn't get diagnosed during the pandemic and are now coming through the chain. So this, their core business is absolutely flying. That pathology, that digital pathology, your pathology division is just great. And then the other two parts of it, which is the genomics and the stability storage. Again, in the first half, they were up, if you put them together, around about sort of like, you know, 10% doing. So they're trading very nicely indeed. The only sort of slow one is obviously their PCR COVID testing division, which has now been essentially totally resized and restructured, and they took a sort of like exceptional charge. So that's come out. But the core business is absolutely flying. I mean, they just got record demand. And the sort of like the nice or lovely problem that they have is servicing that demand and bringing on more pathologists and investing more internally to improve productivity and throughput. And they've got the technology to be able to do that, to not only get that, you know, deliver the extra throughput for the NHS, but do it better and more accurately for them as well. So I think they're in an A1 position, and the shares are still trading at sort of like 125p. And yeah, the CEO, or sorry, the exec chairman, Jay LeCue, I mean, he bought a shed load of shares a few months back at 129p because he sees upside.
Yeah, and you've got to give it to the management there. When the COVID thing came out, they pivot and they prioritise that part of the business they're going to benefit. And in fact, you know, something like Novacyt, who was the king of COVID tests, and everyone hyped around that. And I think this was a silent hero here, you know, Source Bio. They did really, really well.
Yeah.
But they weren't hyped as much as Novacyt, you know. But and now they've got other parts of the business they can pivot and pull the levers on. So it's not just a one trick pony, is it? You know.
Now and another one which has got, you know, unbelievable demand, and it's just really sad, you know, satisfying, is this. Is Bellascura, which is a sort of like a, you know, pioneering next generation portable oxygen concentrator device, medical devices manufacturer. And, you know, they're sort of like aiming to hit sort of like, you know, their units from a standing start of last year to about 4,000 for this year, and then go to, and you know, Dowgate, their broker, reckon they can easily hit 70,000 by 2025. So on that basis, then they've got huge amounts of demand, and what they're trying to do is just get the right distributors and get their supply chain, you know, to be able to ramp that up. And the supply chain, they're doing that brilliantly in terms of, you know, they've got local manufacturer out of or contract manufacturer out in the US, and they've also brought one of the biggest sort of electronics manufacturers out in China on board as well to do the Asian side of it. And you know, The news this week was that they've now brought on one of the biggest distributors in the US as well, who want to take that product, which again says the technology works, there's demand for it because they can see it. And, you know, it's all systems go on that business. And I've spoken to the CEO a few times, you know, Bob Rauker, and he's very confident on actually how the business is doing, and it's got plenty of cash. But the underlying secular, you know, need for portable oxygen concentrators isn't going away anytime soon. I mean, it's COPD, so, you know, lung cancer patients, this sort of stuff, who are struggling to breathe. And you've got people with pneumonia. And now you've also got, you know, all long COVID problems around the world. So, and these things are, they reduce the cost for the healthcare because it allows people to be treated in their houses, you know, domestically, and it gives a much better quality of life for patients. So they're just so much better than the static type of oxygen support devices that are currently on the market. And yeah, the demand is just off the charts for them. So it's really all systems go, getting that supply chain parts, you know, chips all together so that they can meet the demand.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? And like I say, they are, these companies here are sort of insulated, or even benefit some of them from this economic outlook. And it's worth looking at that because, you know, the economy can lag to a certain extent, and you may get, you know, if you're holding a stock, you think, oh, it'll be fine. You'll find, you know, the earnings, of course, are delayed they're not reported in real time, are they? So you get the earnings coming out, like, you know, 6 months down the line, 3 months down the line. So the bad reports may come out a lot later than you think. So it's worth, you know, looking at these companies that are largely insulated from these headwinds, and then maybe taking the position if you like them, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly the case with another sort of, like, you know, healthcare or over-the-counter one we've talked about is Venture Life. And they came out with a trading update, half-year trading update, which was the same, basically, they're in line with expectations. But again, they're sort of like a show-me story. And until the market gets comfortable with that the business is right-sizing, and, you know, then it's still going to sort of like put on a ridiculously low multiple. And it trades at sort of less than half of what the, you know, the area, you know, the multiple would be. I mean, I think that they're on about, what is it, 33p at the moment. And, you know, I mean, that sort of equates to sort of like a, you know, a 5.3 times EBITDA multiple, and peers are on about 12 times. So yeah, it just shows you the potential upside. And, you know, I know Singer's are the sort of house broker on it, and they've got a price target, I think, of, I can't remember what it was. It was 60 or 70p, 65p, I think it is. You know, they could do very well. And you know, another sort of like good endorsement that there's value there is the exec chairman. He bought around about £100,000 worth of shares at 35p after the trading updates. That says everything, really. It's a similar sort of, you know, story as we talked about with the you know, at Purple Bricks, that the management team are now starting to say this is just crazy valuation and the business is moving ahead. And I have every confidence that the, you know, the management team will get that business, you know, singing again.
Yeah, and when you can be objective about bull and bear markets, you realise if you look at, you can find plenty of companies, decent companies now, almost just trading on one time sales or less than. Now, in a bull market, you won't get that. There'll be three, four, five times, whatever, you know, it's ridiculous. So you realise, in fact, if you look in valuation metrics only, you know, or EBITDA, EV, whatever, these are decent valuations right here, cheap valuations. Yeah. And everything oversells, everything overbuys, you know. So it's funny, people start buying at the top and selling at the bottom, but it should be the way around, you know.
Yeah. And in that trading update, what was really important as well was that the issues that they had talked about had been sort of holding them back, which was input cost pressures and supply chain challenges and COVID-related lockdowns in China. They were now saying that they've either plateaued or actually easing as well. And on that, but, and that's actually consistent with a lot of other sort of, like, yeah, you know, other businesses, et cetera. So on that, you know, under that assumption, then, you know, you can easily see this business sort of, like, you know, improving its margins and just the whole that supply chain alleviating. So if you push the clock forward, you know, it's going to be a tough year, as always is in 2022, but you could easily see in 2023, this one, the shares have doubled on this, because they still would be cheaper, even on a, you know, because with a better, even higher EBITDA for next year. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's why the chairman has, say, bought £100,000 worth of 35p. I mean, it says everything, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Anything else? Anything else worth chatting about?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was just coming full circle. You asked me about sort of like, you know, the sort of top level macro, and I do have some big picture macro stocks in terms of, you know, we can see it. And as I say, you know, you've got basically that sell off we had in June on NASDAQ, or it'd been the whole year, and they've had a rebound. And two of mine really, or three of them really play into it. You've got Aviva, SAP, and Infineon Technologies all produced their Q2 numbers over the last couple of weeks. Now, Aviva, as we say, they basically do CAD-CAM software and virtualization software for building sort of like, you know, refineries and offshore oil platforms and industrialization. So they're a big driver, obviously, the metaverse and all things digitization and improving efficiencies. They've come out, they're saying that they're seeing acceleration of moving to the cloud and for digitization, and the demand is still strong. I mean, I would, you know, it's a top quality firm, and I would say the shares are currently are trading around about sort of fair value, but they're seeing sort of double digit ARR growth. That's their, you know, their cloud ARR growth. Similarly with SAP, they're seeing acceleration in them shift to the cloud by their customers. And what's that doing for them and for Aviva? Is that overall, that's reducing their revenues and their profitability, because they're not winning as many perpetual license, but the underlying fundamentals of the business is improving. I mean, they're the biggest, you know, as you know, enterprise accountancy firm. And I would do a fair value for Aviva. I would have roughly around about £22-23 per share, but that's on assumption such that they do double digit, you know, sort of like sales or high single digits or sort of 10% sort of sales growth, etc., going forward in the next few years. And I could see with that whole metaverse that goes a lot higher. Likewise with SAP, I've used a sort of like 4x sales multiple on it, and I'm getting around about €100. They're trading at about 92, 93 at the moment. So there isn't that much upside, but they're a quality firm paying dividends. And I could see that with the whole digitization process and the opportunities they have in terms of the cloud, I could see that, you know, that their growth accelerating. And then Infineon came out with their numbers, which is the number, basically one of the world's biggest, the world's biggest automotive chip manufacturer. So it goes into EV. It also goes into renewables, that decarbonization, and also into data centers. And they're not into really only consumer side of it, and smartphones is only about 15% of their revenue. The main thing is obviously just the big industrialization, the renewables, the decarbonization, and the power transition. That's 85% of their business. And I actually think they're a quality business, but I'd put the fair value at about 34, some, you know, sort of like euros, and that would be a modest one. So, you know, I'm happy to hold them. I bought them because they're top quality companies benefiting from long-term secular, you know, trends. I bought them at a relatively fair value, and I still think they're trading at a relatively fair value. So, you know, there's no reason to worry. But if anybody wants to go in on those, all I would say is that, you know, don't expect lightning type of returns. They are sort of your classic sort of 8% per annum type stock, big corporates who have huge dominant positions, huge USPs, recurring revenue streams, and are benefiting from secular growth. But they're not cheap, but they are quality firms. Mm-hmm, a place to hide out, and you can always use them as a source of funds if I want to. Not that I do want to, anyway.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, in fact, do you know what? You mentioned supply chains there. I forgot to mention, I still own, you know, Biome Technologies, and last year was going to be their big year because they had two big commercial customers in the US, and essentially supply chain problems have knocked them by about a year, and they haven't been able to get parts. And even the other side, Stanelco as well, same thing. They've had big orders from there, it's recovering, but again, it's been knocked. But they did do a trading update for Q2. Basically, they 1.4 million, and for the half year, they did 2.5 million. They're guiding towards over 8 million for this year. And people said, are they going to do that? And I've seen Paul's interviews, and I emailed him. He said, yeah, listen, essentially, it's taken us a year. They got two big commercial customers launching in H1 2023. So it's taken us a year to build up their inventory. And now they're fully satisfied. They've got enough inventory and it's starting to work now. The supply chain is starting to work. So the orders are there as they're going to start commercializing this in the second half of the year. So they're going to do, what, from 2.5 to 8 million this year. And they've reiterated guidance on that. And he said, yeah, it's basically, you know, we've got the orders there, but it's just getting the stuff out to them. So it's so annoying. It's taken a year. So they've been knocked by a year. But hopefully the second half of this year, they're expecting the bigger things to happen. So hopefully that'll happen. But they did say they're very confident that the customers have got all the inventory they need.
How did the shares react on it?
It didn't really do it. It went down a little bit. I think it was 9%.
And that chimes with what your observation was earlier on, wasn't it? I.e., such that, you know, small caps, even on sort of like, you know, less ballistic, you know, sort of releases, then have actually started to do pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, I can see Paul, the CEO's frustration. You know, he said the annoying thing is we've got some amazing orders here. We've got big commercial customers happening. We can't get stuff to them. It's taken us, whereas, you know, a while back, it took us 2-3 weeks to get something to America. It was taking 3 months. And so he said it's just impossible to work with at the moment. But now it's taken them a year to build up that inventory and the customers have all the stuff they need. So, yeah, so I'm hoping for a good H2 with those. But they're taking the hammer in. So, I'm holding in there, though. Anyway, marvellous stuff. Thanks, Paul, for that. And honestly, if I'm going on holidays next, I'll let you know. But we're still set for in 2 weeks' time. Cheers.
Keep going with the black shirts.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.